Blog Talk Radio.
Lace them up and let's go. Good morning, family. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. And welcome to this week's episode of Radio Salvatore Dress Live Real Radio. We in the building. I am your host, Lee Vaughn. What's going on, family? This week, we're going to talk about Juneteenth. We're going to talk about reparations. We're going to talk about a host of other things. It's going to be a blackout show in a lot of ways, and that's okay because every now and again, we need to black out the show. So that's what's up. That's what it is. We're going to be joined today by Rodney Smith. Mr. Smith has gone and done some magnificent things for and in the city of Las Vegas. If you haven't seen him, just Google the guy's name. He's all over the place. Just was watching a video of him as he cleaned up the statue of Martin Luther King in Las Vegas, bringing some light upon that project. But he's constantly in the community. He's a pillar of the community, and we are privileged to have him. He's also one of my great friends. He's also my business partner. So it's a lovely situation to be joined by him because he has a very busy schedule, but he always makes time for us whenever he can and whenever we need him. So that's what's up. Thomas Berry is going to join us as well today. So it's definitely going to get a little thick up in here. And Rashi's going to ride with us today. So as soon as she gets herself together, because the show was – it actually started a little early, and then it stopped and then started again. Thought, look, when you do live radio, anything can happen. It happens, folks, but we're good and we're cool. This week we went through the process of celebrating Juneteenth. If you're not familiar with Juneteenth, it happens on June 19th every year. And it's a celebration of when the folks enslaved in Texas were actually notified of the Emancipation Proclamation. Now, because of the logistics of the nation at the time, Texas was not in a battleground during the Civil War. I mean, it was too freaking far away, right? And it wasn't as easy to get information to and from, obviously, because of the distance and whatnot. We didn't have Google back then, you know what I'm saying? There was no internet, there was no Skype, there was no texting, thank God. There were no tweets, no Instagram. So things took a little while longer. Now, in this case, it took a hell of a lot longer, but it took a little while longer for information to pass on to the great state of Texas. And once it occurred, everyone in the nation at that time was made aware that President Lincoln had decreed the Emancipation Proclamation, which he did September of 1863. So they found out in June of 1865. That's a little bit of a gap. But as the elder and one of the most religious people that we have on the show, I also wanted Rodney to speak on the watch night. And I'm not sure if the two are connected or not, because the Emancipation Proclamation was actually to take in effect 1 January of 1863. And the watch night, which a lot of churches still observe today, especially in the African-American community, is New Year's. So, you know, they lock themselves in, have this whole church service dedicated to the ringing in of the New Year. And those roots, if my information is correct, came from the understanding, the hope that upon the new year would come freedom. And I want him to dig into that again as the elder and one of the most religious people that come on the show. I'm pretty sure he has some sort of perspective on that. Good morning, Rashi. How you doing, sis? What's going on with you?
Oh, man, I am so glad to be talking to you. I have had a whirlwind 30 days.
But the kids love you, though, don't they? The kids love you.
Look, it's not even the children now. I am a candle maker at night.
Oh, Lord, have mercy. Girl, you done went from having no job to having 20 jobs. You about as bad as me.
I got all the jobs. And they are tearing a mud hole into my energy. And so I'm just trying to hold the phone up now. Somebody going to have to come and hold the phone.
Well, we're going to get through it. We're going to get through it. Thank you so much for joining us. We understand that you have taken on the charge of leading our youth through the muddy and sometimes treacherous waters called the educational system, and we applaud you for doing that without a doubt. We so applaud you for doing it, because I damn sure couldn't do it. I would have to hit one of them little bastards in the throat. I ain't even going to lie.
They ended off the year by calling me a bum-ass bitch, but that's all right. Next year, we're going to better and more inventive ways to make substitutes.
To
shit.
Rodney's already on, so we're gonna ride with them and bring him up. Good morning, brother. How you doing, sir?
I am doing well. How are both of you doing?
Outstanding, outstanding. It's a lovely day. It's a Saturday. It's a beautiful morning. Not too daggone hot. The sun is shining. It ain't raining. I'm good all the way around. What about you, Rashi? You good?
Well, I'm good. I've been paid recently, so whatever I'm not feeling good about, I'll rub my paycheck stub on it.
Jesus, how do you go on
that?
You know. You know what I'm saying? Like, how do you go on for stuff like that? You know what I mean? But Brother Rodney, what's happening, man? I know you're busy out there in Vegas. I know it's hotter than a dickens. Well, it's not Look, yeah, it's a little warm. It ain't that hot. Yeah, give it another couple of weeks, it'll be scorching. But what's happening with you, man? How you doing?
Oh, man, actually, I got a little break this morning. Only 76 degrees here in Vegas. Last few weeks have been pretty awesome. Staying busy, partly preparations for Juneteenth, having Juneteenth, celebrating it. And I'm glad that you're doing the show in association with Juneteenth, because when I went to the Juneteenth festival here, it turned out to be a festival as they build it. But I was hoping that there would have been a little more enlightenment and history shared, so people would know what the heck Juneteenth is, its significance, why we are celebrating it, and why it was initially celebrated and should continue to celebrate it. So good forethought on your part for doing this type of show.
Hey, man, I'm trying. You know, we try not to let a good opportunity pass us by, so we wanted to definitely step into this. But you know, and I'm not trying to get too far ahead, but H.R. 40 came up again. The brother Tahashi, I think that's how you pronounce his name. Correct me if I'm wrong. There you go. He gave some beautiful testimony to Congress Wednesday just passed on, again, H.R. 40. So that also prompted this. But as a younger person in the community, you know, I'm saying young, I'm not 20 or 30. I'm in my 40s. But I don't want this knowledge, this wisdom, this struggle to just slide by and like, oh yeah, what's that over there? No, dog. We need to consistently push wisdom, knowledge, and understanding, not only up but also down and sideways in some cases, so that everyone is in the know as to what's going on. And you know, the sad thing is, I'm going to tell you the sad thing is, one of the things that hurts me is when I talk to people whom are very familiar with me, whom are very familiar with the show, and the first thing, or one of the first things they say is, yo, I love what you're doing, but, yeah, I'm just not political, but, you know, I'm just not into that. Into what? You know what I'm saying? If you're 40 and over, you need to be engaged in what's going on around you. Dude, sis, you are much closer to retirement. You are much closer to being at a point in your life where it is expected of you, and you should be willing to pass the baton to somebody else. You know, so you sitting in the cut, you know, giving them your wisdom, but they have the energy to continue to run the race. And if you're not doing that, if you don't see that, if you don't understand that, Houston, we got a problem. I mean, literally and figuratively, we have a freaking problem. And I know a lot of folks who are just sitting on the sidelines, and that doesn't bode well for any of us. Because, you know, if you check out, somebody else is going to check in. Somebody else is going to step up, and you're going to get what they give you versus what you want or what is really best for you. Now, I don't want anyone making those type of decisions for me. Not at all. You know, I'm so anal. I already got my eulogy written out. And it's simple.
Yeah.
It's simple. He was, whatever he was or he wasn't, when I needed him, he was there. That's it. That's all I want people to remember me for. Whatever I was or wasn't, when they needed me, I was there. Right. And you can't say that ain't me. You can't say that ain't me. You know, so that works for me. But yeah, man, shucks. Nah, man, you ain't giving me just any old thing. And I'm not taking just any old thing, because I'm better than that, you know. And my children, my seeds, and the seeds of my seeds deserve better than that. So no, we ain't gonna just sit around and get hit up from left, right, or center with questions that we don't know answers to, like you did to me the other day. You were like, so what was the general order? And, you know, the first thing that popped in my head, because I wasn't really thinking, general order. Well, the dude went to the balcony and he said, so I was thinking about that method of order, not the actual general order that is, in fact, the decree that was read to the people in Texas. I wasn't thinking about that. I was like, well, you know, he came, he slept, he woke up. I'm like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what are you talking about? You know what I'm saying?
He came, he went, he looked,
right. He ate, slept, he woke up the next day, he had the thing right there in front of him, you know, he goes outside, gathers everybody, and boom, like, what are you talking about? And you know, once I played it in my head, I was like, oh, yeah, I don't know, so let me bone up on that and make sure that I'm right, because, you know, being a student of history in general, I love military history, period. So I'm just a junkie for that in any way, shape, or form. But I'm also a lover of African and African-American history. So you combine all those things. I had a very good idea and a very good sense of what Juneteenth is and what it was about. But again, thank you for pointing some things out to me. I didn't have the specifics all lined into play. And I told you when we talked the other day, I said, yo, When we hit it on Saturday, oh, I'll be on point. Trust and believe that. I'll have all my little nuggets, facts, and figures all ready to go. You know what I'm saying? So thank you, though, sir, for cluing me in to the fact that, you know, I still needed to do some work. I appreciate that. But we will stay on topic. Go ahead.
Brother Lee. One of the things my family and I have done over time is incorporate Juneteenth instead of Independence Day. And I think this year we might try them both, so that the idea of independence is in the mindset of my son, of course, and his friends, but how it looks like from each vantage point. Both days are about independence and freedom and liberty, but only one of them, you know, really needed to be enforced, you know, over years. In fact, only one is still really being pushed into the mindsets of the citizens, and that's the liberty that came with Juneteenth. If we can start celebrating by buying same fireworks, same decorations, instead of an American flag, put up a liberation flag. But buy the fireworks and pop them. Grill on Juneteenth. You understand? That's when children will associate their liberty with the fun and excitement and pride, even maybe.
But you're talking about two things that aren't really connected because, you know, were we truly liberated after the Emancipation Proclamation? No. The Emancipation Proclamation was a military strategy. It was one in which Lincoln deployed because the Union was getting their asses handed to them. You know what I'm saying? He's like, yo, look, we got to do something to switch this whole thing up. So he then deploys the strategy of, okay, let's create turmoil from within. So let's say to the slaves that you are free. And let's see how that disrupts them. Right? And it was very effective, to be honest with you, because now, you know, not only are you fighting off the Union advance and the Union attack, but you're worried about, because, you know, most of the fighters for the South were sons of the South. They were the farmers, the lawyers, whomever's, just common folk. So now you got to worry about your slaves either overrunning your young children and your wife, or you stay home and have the Union overrun you and you still lose. So which way you want to go? You know what I'm saying? And let's not forget about the border states whom did not fall under the decree of the Emancipation Proclamation. Let's not forget about the counties in Virginia that were later to form West Virginia, whom did not fall under the Emancipation Proclamation, Tennessee, South Louisiana, Southeast Virginia. There were a lot of pockets, if you will, of the nation at the time that did not fall under the control or whatever of the proclamation, I'm sorry, Emancipation Proclamation. So, yeah, no, you know, it was a beautiful step forward. It was more symbolic than actual, because let's not forget that right after the Civil War, we had another 100 years of lynching. You know, great book, by the way, if you haven't read it, read it, pick it up. It's an excellent book. That didn't end until, well, hell, it never really has ended. You know, one of the principals of the NAACP, every day they ran the flag out talking about there was a man lynched today. I mean, come on, dog. You know, there were people being lynched right and left, left and right, up until the late 60s. You know, there was a slowdown period in the 70s. You know, brother got lynched in the 80s. You know, Mr. Bird down in Texas, he was drugged behind a freaking truck. You know, yeah, no. No, but I understand your mindset, to be honest with you. And I think it's valid. I think that both do deserve to be equaled, if you will, or viewed in the same light. But let's be honest, too. America's independence wasn't about freedom of oppression from the British. It was about freedom from paying them taxes. That was what the hell that was about. It was about freedom from paying them jokers taxes. That was about money. That wasn't about freedom of expression, freedom of life. It was about money. Them jokers started making money over this mug, hand and foot and hands. Like, hold on, dog. Why I gotta give you half of what I make? Yeah, nah, I ain't feeling that. Because them motherfuckers that got themselves together in Philadelphia, none of them were broke by no stretch of the imagination. None of them. There was ne'er broke person in that room. And they still refused to show front and center the black guy that was in the daggone room. You know what I'm saying? So no, let's not get it too twisted. I do appreciate the premise, but no, let's not get it too twisted. No. Mm-mm. I'm sorry. So the Emancipation Proclamation was declared 22 September 1862, as I alluded to a little bit earlier, with an effective date of 1 January 1863. On 19 June 1865, Union General Gordon Granger arrived in Galveston, Texas. He proceeded to go to the balcony of Austin Villa and read for the people of Texas General Order Number 3, which was an executive order from the President of the United States saying, in accordance with the proclamation from the executive of the United States, the slaves here in Texas are now free, blah, 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 blah. Now, the blase boomers, the blase blah is you're free, you now can go about life as a free person. Your labor should now be paid for by the person whom previously was your slave master, and, you know, peace, we out. In a lot of ways, that's what it was. Peace, we out. Y'all figure it out, but, you know, we wanted to give you this information. Right or wrong, am I that far off there, Rodney?
No, you're doing good, brother. I'm enjoying listening to you.
You know, so there was no wealth. I'm sorry. There was another part of that. There will be no welfare around this peace. So y'all don't just be coming around my troops trying to get food and lodging and all that. We ain't doing that. So y'all stay where y'all at. Y'all work that out with that man that was just raping your woman and raping your daughter and beating you with the whip. Y'all work that out betwixt you, betwixt y'all too. And yeah, we gonna be over here in the cut chilling, and I'm about to go back to DC. So yeah, y'all be good. All right, thank you very much. Don't forget who did this for you. All right, yeah, we out. And in essence, that's what happened. That's what happened. And in a situation like that, of course, you're going to get chaos, right? But, you know, reconstruction happened for a very short period of time in our nation's history, about 10 years. We had black folks elected to gubernatorships, the Senate, so on and so forth.
Hold on.
You're coming across very, very choppy. Step to your mic because you're coming across very choppy. Try it again.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes. Yeah. Rashi, it's not working. It's not working. It's okay. So, Rodney, what did you all do outside of the festival in Vegas for Juneteenth?
So the biggest event that was had that I'm aware of was the festival at Kasanga Park next to Doolittle Community Center, and it was had a live by the radio station, the one almost black radio station that we had, and it was a festival. Now the National Juneteenth Committee, they had a couple of other events, primarily flag raising events, one at our federal courthouse, and they've been mm-hmm. here for roughly 4 or 5 years doing that. And a couple of years they did it at the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. statue, which is eventually how they got me involved with it. The National Juneteenth Committee had gone around in the local community, and they had lobbied our state legislators for Juneteenth to be recognized in Nevada, which they were successful in doing so.
Congratulations.
And since then, they have been lobbying just the community in general to have something more expansive than a festival. Though a festival mm-hmm. is fine because there's a whole bunch of festivities once those brothers and sisters were told they were free or partly free.
Mm-hmm.
And so the festival is good, and that's why I was wanting to know what Brother Barry had going on where he is and what you had going on, because unfortunately for us, at the largest Juneteenth festival, it was light on the education and history of Juneteenth. So to a certain mm-hmm. extent, it was a good turnout of vendors, a good turnout of people, some really good entertainment. But the part that I think ties it all together was the education and information about Juneteenth, which could definitely improve. I'll put it that way.
But I think it can improve across the board because, you know, we didn't have a lot that I was aware of on my side of the world at all. And I'm in Baltimore this week. I haven't gone anywhere. But we didn't. I actually went to...
So you're visiting.
You know how I do. Yeah, for real, right? You know how I do. Actually, I'm stable for a little bit, man. I was thinking about doing this, that, and the third, but believe it or not, I've booked travel to Cuba in August. So my focus now is on doing that. I'm not trying to do too much of anything until that is done and over with. So
Brother, make sure that your president has not blocked your trip to Cuba.
Well, he
has.
Things have changed a little bit with the travel to Cuba.
Okay.
He hasn't because of this. You know, it's for journalistic purposes. So I'm going to go over and do a whole thing. For real, for real. So I'm looking forward to it. You know what I'm saying? And we can still travel because of what we do. You know what I'm saying? So that's what's up. Now, I just have to, I'm going to take off next Friday and go down to the consulate and see if they will allow me to broadcast from there. Now, that we'll see. You know, hopefully I can. That would be awesome. But if I can't, then, you know, I'll record everything and just bring it back. You know what I'm saying? But, yeah, it's definitely the move. Definitely the move. And I'm looking forward to it. But I was looking at doing this and doing that and doing this and doing that. And I was like, yo, hold on, man. You ain't rich. Like, you need to pace yourself, son. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, yeah, man, look, because I was, yeah. I had some major plans in the head, kid. I was like, oh, yo, I'll go to Montreal for the 4th, and I'll do this, and I'll do that. Then I was like, yeah. That all adds up, and August is getting here really, really fast. Man, have you noticed how quickly the summer goes now that we older? You know, when you were young, the summer seemed like it was forever.
That was the saddest older. Come on, man.
I'm just saying. It's like,
all right, well, I'm sorry. One of the things I was saying earlier was about our literacy improvement amongst those who were born at least 5 years old or older during the time of emancipation and Reconstruction. It was always in this country a matter of law forcing us to learn. And when we got an opportunity to do it without punishment, without fear of being killed, we learned and learned and learned to where we were able to join politics. We were able to start getting the patents for our inventions. We were always inventing. But it was only after freedom that we could get the credentials associated with having done that. And people like Jack Johnson, the boxer, and, you know, all manner of other people were able to finally benefit from their works. It's no small feat. It wasn't really that important for them to give us welfare because we knew what to do for each other. We knew to set up something called the Freedmen's Bureau. And I want to say the first real sabotage other than slavery itself, the first real sabotage came under what they did to the defuncting of the Freedmen's Bureau. That let us know, even if you do right by yourself, even if you create what was essentially a super PAC, what we would define today as a super PAC, we still won't give you what you need to do better. While we still farming, doing subsidy farming, even back then they were subsidizing farming and agriculture. So I just want people to know that Juneteenth is important because it was a 180-degree uphill climb for us to get where we are even right now, and now the incline is still at like 90 degrees, you know? We still working it, and it goes, fluctuates up and down. And if we start thinking that what Mitch McConnell said, the people who would have been affected most by that, by those enslavement decisions are dead and ain't nobody on that no more, if we let them convince us that there is no residual effect from what happened then we might as well go ahead and get back in on to the farm. That's like saying re-enslave us. How do you make people stop doing something? You make them have consequences. There has been absolutely no consequence in the United States of America for its participation in the enslavement of the black of the African. Now, anybody willing to refute, you know, refute that if you want to.
No, not at all. And I think that's why the conversation and the passage of H.R. 40 is so necessary, because you know, this joker talking about Mr. McConnell, talking about, you know, we paid for our greatest sins in fighting the Civil War. Let's not get that twisted either. The Civil War was not about freeing the slaves by any stretch of the imagination. The Civil War was about keeping the Union together, because the North understood that the raw materials that it needed for its manufacturing plants were coming from the South. The North understood that the raw materials for its shipbuilding operations were coming from the South. They were not coming from the North. So that's what the freaking Civil War was about. It wasn't about freeing the slaves. We were a byproduct. Again, it was a military tactic. It was a way to slow the bleeding of the North, to inflict constant conflict looking over your shoulder in the South. Because, again, you didn't know when the next slave revolt was going to pop up. You didn't know if it was really safe for you to go and fight for the South, because, you know, you looking at some jokers that you have treated very harshly, and you know in your heart of hearts, if it were you that were treated such and you saw an opportunity to take advantage of and get your freedom, you would damn sure do so, and by any means necessary. So would you leave your loved ones in that type of situation? I think not. So you stayed your butt at home. You know what I'm saying? So, no, man, kill that foolishness. The Civil War was not about freeing the slaves. So, you know, Mr. McConnell, stop. Now, as
you know,
far
Lee,
as people not
Lee,
being that.
I know we're moving forward, but if we could take a step back for a minute and go back. And I just want to, there's a couple of points that you hit on that, and you may be leading to that too, but I just wanted to make sure that the people got it. And when we talk about Freedom Day or Emancipation Day being Juneteenth, I want people to get the full effect, though, of what it meant and what it didn't mean. Because the people in Texas got their notification that they were freed. But going back to the point that you said earlier, the Emancipation Proclamation was signed September 22nd, 1862, that went into effect January 1st, 1863. That date is important because not only in your area of the world, slaves were actually freed in Washington, D.C. by Lincoln. And they were freed in D.C. By Lincoln first. And so that's why the folks in D.C. actually celebrate Emancipation Day separate from a lot of other people, because they got their freedom first. Lincoln didn't want to be, for whatever reason, president. And he's talking about, you know, his debates with Douglas. A lot of it hinged on freeing of the slaves, but yet he was going to be the president with our capital still having slaves. So emancipation for black people happened in, by that name, actually happened in D.C. first, because, you know, that was one of those border states that sort of fell in between the gray area of who was freed and who wasn't by the Emancipation Proclamation that went into effect January 1st. So, but the ones that were actually and technically freed were, and they had a different level of freedom than what happened in Juneteenth, which I think is critically important to the discussion, to reinforce the words of General Order 3, because even though it freed the slaves, technically, what it really meant was they had to be paid for their labor, but really they were expected to give their labor for a nominal fee to the same people who had previously enslaved them. And that piece was a big flaw in the general order, because they also passed laws around that same time that reinforced or established vagrancy and loitering. And the way that the general order reads, it actually specifies in the general order that you cannot be idle.
Correct.
So if you have to go to, so if you, you've been freed, your slave master is not happy that you've been freed. And then you have to go and ask that same person to pay you. Now, the slave master probably is a little ticked, right? Because somebody just took his property and that he was getting free labor and making free babies with, to put it politely. And then he's told he can no longer do that. So when we look at the some of the prison laws that came about during the Black Codes, the Vagrancy Act was sort of the answer to, okay, you're freeing the slaves. All right, well, you free them. If they go free and they're out there being idle, meaning they don't have a job, then we can arrest them. And then through convict leasing, we can go and for a nominal fee, pay their bail. Another reason why prison bail reform is a farce and needs to be done away with today, pay their bail, and then force that same person to work for the plantation owner until the plantation owner says that, if he ever says that it's repaid, until it's repaid. So it was sort of a bait and switch. On paper, yeah, it looked great. And if you could escape Texas, if you could escape the South, then maybe you could have a semblance of freedom. But, you know, the whole sharecropping thing came into play.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you didn't have any land, how could you work? The only people that you could work for is for white people, and mostly people who would enslave you. And that's it. Hopefully you could make some money and eventually buy some land. But really, it wasn't true freedom. It was only a partial freedom.
But it was a hustle from the jump, because, it, again, in the general order, it reads that the freedmen are advised to remain quietly at their present homes and work for wages. How are you going to remain quietly at your present home? First of all, you ain't got a home. You got a hut. If you had a hut.
Yeah, right.
And you gonna shut your mouth after living the entirety of your life under the thumb, the harsh thumb, boot, or whatever, hammer, whip, whatever, of this joker, again, who has raped your mama, raped your sister, raped your daughter, raped your wife, and you just supposed to be like, yeah, what's up? Everything good? Yeah, let me get that 20, because I went over here and cut down this wood and picked this cotton. So, yeah, I need 20 on that. Okay, no problem. Really? That's what men do. A man just going, you know, just going to let that slide. He's going to let that ride. Nah, man, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. So it was a setup from the jump, like you said. You know, the bait and switch, the penal laws. KRS-One has a very poignant rhyme about the police system, how it went from the overseer to the officer. If you say overseer fast enough, you'll get to officer. You know what I'm saying? So one went hand in hand with the other. But yeah, America was not set up to be inclusive of black people, period. And the faster we realize that. The faster we reconcile that in our heads, the better off we'll be. Not saying that we need to get on the gray star liner and
hold on. Brother Lee, it's not a matter of whether or not it was set up. We have invested blood, sweat, tears, bone, and birth to this. Since we've been here, our influence on the United States of America has been exponentially better. You understand? We are owed at least an acknowledgement of that work.
I wanna say something to you because you don't really watch sports, but you can give 20, 30 years, 7 years, broken bones, concussions, bloody nose, what have you, to whatever franchise that you play for. When they feel as though your ass ain't cutting it like you used to, they ain't gonna cut you or trade you. There's no difference. As a veteran in the military of the United States of America, if you are at 13 years, 12 years, 16 years, 17 years, you get injured, or you do the fat boy program, you gain too much weight, they will cut you and get rid of you like you never existed. There's no difference. There's no difference. No difference. Stop thinking like us and think like them. There's no difference. No difference. None whatsoever. Now, it would be nice for us to get that recognition. It may happen. I doubt it. Because at the core of most of the businesses in this country, there is slave labor. At the core of most of the businesses in this country, there is slave labor. Slaves were used as guarantee on insurance claims. Insurance companies got their start off of slave labor. Every business needs an insurance company. Hello? It ain't hard. It ain't hard. It's not hard. Speaking to truth about the Homestead Act, about the origins of the GI Bill, about redlining, really dealing with that as a country would turn this country upside down. To be honest with you, to have a truthful, honest, open conversation about how those things have shifted wealth to one side of the equation versus the other side, which would turn this country upside down. You think America is ready for that? Do you think America will ever do that? America would ever do that? America sees what's happening in Africa, South Africa specifically. America don't want to do that. Them black folks took them white folks like, y'all got to go. Y'all gone, period. These folks living in trailers. That's my land. That's my family's land. Always been my family land. Y'all came and took it from us. Guess what? We taking it from you. Peace, go. You ain't got 30 days. You got 3. Get out or you dying. Period. Would we do such a thing like that? Not necessarily. I don't think we would. But they don't want to risk it. It would turn this country upside down. America ain't ready for that. Because we don't make anything. We don't make anything but war. We don't make anything but war. So we're not in a financial, we're not in a financial comfort zone to go through a true change like that, because we don't have anything to provide to the world except for war. That's all we do. And oil. War and oil. That's it. And the world can get oil for somebody else. It ain't hard. There are plenty of other countries out there with oil. You know what I'm saying? So, no.
So, Lee,
yeah,
I would say this.
Go ahead.
I remember when you and I both in the military, and
I think it's a joke.
There
it's
was
a joke
never...
out here about what reparations. Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. Let me real quick. With information, I know that H.R. 40 is not a month count of welfare. What we're talking about is something to the provisions that Native Americans get for free education, housing, a housing initiative that makes sure they're not being price gouged or extra money that is charged, you know, for living in certain districts, the red line districts. They can pay for that differential. This is what we're talking about: free education, free health, help with housing. You understand some of the things that, and
okay.
I don't want people to think they finna get a check.
All right. Well, again, I'm sorry, Rashi. I think I got your point, but. The connection is really bad, but I heard when you talked about the assistance with the redlining in the housing. Think about this. All right, let's attack that one premise, and we'll stick there. And then Rodney, you can get in. So, housing, help with housing and redlining. Redlining. Most of the cities were the areas that were redlined. Most cities. What's happening in most major cities right now? Gentrification. So. There is a huge influx of white folks coming back into the city that are purchasing land in those red line areas, homes, whatever, and converting the condominiums, converting them into strip malls. Where are you going to get that back at? It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You know, folks see they are one, two steps ahead of the game. With our current leadership in the Senate, they are being allowed to stay two steps ahead of the game because of what he's doing in the court system, and we've talked about that on the show a million and one times. But we have very little recourse at this time to start turning that ship. I mean, come on now. H.R. 40 has been proposed every year for how many years, Rodney?
Oh, wow. But it goes back to Congressman Conyers.
And it's gone nowhere. It's gone nowhere because folks understand the browning of America is about to happen. They pushed it. They kicked the can as long as they could. They're going to kick it a little further until it's mandated. But by the time it's mandated, it's going to be too late because of what's happening right now. So, we gave you the opportunity. We did the study. This is what we should do, but we can't kick these people out because, you know, they own the land. They bought it. We can't kick this person out because that's his home now. That's her home. That's Starbucks. That's a Whole Foods. That's a Trader Joe's. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? It's a hustle, man. It is a hustle. It's a cruel hustle. And I said what I said about the sooner we reconcile that, the better off we'll be, is because hopefully we will start to act more homogeneous if we recognize that it wasn't meant for us. And we will exercise group economics and move toward exercising group power. And group power is, Rodney, we talked about this when you were on the show some months ago. So now you start to look at your city council, you start to look at your school board, and you start to say, okay, well, we want this person on the school board in order to represent our interests. And then a couple of years later, then you move one person from the school board, you put them on the city council, you move another person to the school board, and then you continuously move up the chain. But along the way, you write a check. because you're exercising group economics, and now you're exercising group power. That's what you do. We don't do that because we want to buy into this American dream that was never meant for us. That's my issue. Go ahead, Rodney. You have something to say. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say that never is a very long time. And I think back to when you and I were in the service, and there was this thing about gays serving in the military, people from the LGBT community serving openly in the military. And many people back then said it would never happen. Well, gays are serving openly in the military today. They said that same-sex marriage would never happen in America. And we have same-sex marriage. As a matter of fact, schools are even starting to teach specific LGBTQ history. So when we say, if we say it never will happen, then maybe it never will happen because we are the ones who said it won't happen. I think that we should look at the work that needs to be done to push the agenda to make it happen, because then it is possible for it to happen. And if we could have same-sex marriage and gays serving openly in the military, and now they're even a move for transgenders to have less restrictions, then I do not see why black people cannot receive reparations. After all, even slave owners received reparations. So if slave owners, the people who enslaved us, could get reparations, again, there's absolutely no reason why black people, Africans, African Americans, there's no reason why they're not able to get it. The discussion on H.R. 40 is not about necessarily receiving reparations now. Well, it's not about receiving reparations now at all, but it is a study of what reparations would look like. And every conversation I've had, black or white, it don't make a difference, people who are against reparations, the conversation always changes to how much is it going to cost.
Right.
And then the other thing is, well, if we do this now, we may have to do it later. What's to stop it from happening? And then they come up with a bunch of questions on what it is. And that tells me that maybe they don't understand what H.R. 40 is, and H.R. 40 is the study. It is to answer that question that they all have. So I do believe in H.R. 40. As a matter of fact, if the presidential candidates, and not just the presidential candidates, but down ballot, all the way down the ballot, if they don't support H.R. 40, which is not even actually reparations, but just a study of what reparations looks like, if they cannot bring themselves to support it, you were talking about group economics, let's talk about group politics. If they cannot bring themselves to support a study for reparations, then we should not be able to bring ourselves to cast our
vote. To vote for them. Correct. 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 I agree with you. I totally agree.
So we should take it from beyond just, it's a conversation, it won't happen, because, of course, if the opposition hears us saying that it won't happen, that just gives them credence to say the same thing and say it's a waste of time. And they can even point to us to say, look, even they don't think it's going to happen, so why are we wasting congressional time on this? We have to believe in it, and we have to work towards it, if for nothing else. It is the right thing to do morally. And then using those papers that those people in the white wigs wrote in their Declaration of Independence, which the Constitution came from, just codified it. It said that all men had inalienable rights that were given, bestowed upon them by their creator. It didn't even say which creator. It said by their creator. So let's use their words, because they use them against us all the time. Well, let's use their words for us, because we can read now. So that is something that we're supposed to have, and we shouldn't stop until we get it. And that board game of Monopoly that they started us out on, where they owned everything and then ridicule us for not having more, even though shortly after we were free, they put us back in some bondage with the Jim Crow laws. I think we just need to keep pushing for the system. Dr. King, he said he wasn't trying to destroy the Constitution. He said he was trying to put it into practice for everybody. That's my focus, and I hope that that's the focus for those people out there. There's a debt owed, and that debt can be paid back in multiple ways, whether it's a check, whether it's free education, free insurance, no taxes. You know, that's the discussion, and we should have the discussion.
But see, I'm not afraid of a check. I'm not afraid of saying that folks should get a check. I'm not afraid of saying that because sometimes the only way for people to learn is for you to hurt their pockets. And okay, so I'm not entitled to my opinion. Go ahead.
When you get it, okay. What do we do with it? What do we do with our paycheck? Or even with our paycheck? We end up putting that back into the system that is already trying to deny us that fund in the first place. You have to alleviate the actual debt in first. You have to go ahead of it. Giving money pays the system back. You have to make sure that we find our pitfalls. What is the pitfall for the African American? One of them is health. We live under a stressful system, and so because of that, we have high blood pressure, heart disease, high rates of cancer, whatnot. So the cost associated with on the stress of living in the United States should be on them. Plus, our other pitfall is trying to compete in industry, meaning we have to do education. In order to do that, we have to go to the PhD level sometime. That costs. Take that away. The check ain't going to do it, I promise you.
I wasn't finished with my opinion, but, you know, since you wanted to jump in, I wanted to give you time to give yours. I was saying that I'm not opposed to giving people a check because sometimes the only way for people to learn is by hurting their pockets. However, that wouldn't be the end-all be-all because, to your point, only thing you're going to do with money in your pocket is give it back to those whom were oppressing you. So it's going from
right.
One hand right back to the original hand. So I would also speak to education and or land rights. And I ain't talking about no damn land in Montana, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota. No. I'm talking about some primo land that we were kicked out of. Kicked out of. and prevented from gaining. I mean, shit. Seneca Village in Manhattan, prime real estate. Why can't we get a portion of Central Park back? It was ours. We were kicked off of it. Why not? You know what I'm saying? Do you understand how that would change New York City? You know what I'm saying? Like, seriously, like, yo, yeah, y'all, that three-quarter that we stole from y'all, yeah, y'all can have that back. You understand what that would do in New York? That prime real estate? Oh, my gosh. The money generated off of that in and of itself. And not converted to homes, not converted to farmland, just rent it back to the city. Do you understand how much money that would generate? Rent it back. The state of New York would have to pay a fund X amount of dollars every month for uses of Central Park. Oh, my goodness, that would be great. With the property values in New York City right now, that would be absolutely astronomical as far as the fund is concerned. And then those funds could then turn around and prop up the United Negro College Fund, HBCUs, so on and so forth. So now you have the educational opportunities that are self-sustained and paid for. You have a check in your pocket. Now do what you do. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I'm not opposed to that. I was at one point because I was like, you know, folks get money and they just blow it.
Right.
I'm no longer. Like, nah. Sometimes you got to hit people where it hurts the most. And in America, where it hurts the most is the bottom line. Hit America's bottom line, she'll pay attention. She'll get real humble. she'll get real humble. Like, yeah, okay, what y'all need? That you sure that's all I can do for you? Okay, cool. She'll get real humble. But until you hit that bottom line, man, she ain't going to take you serious. Why should she? Why should she? Mm-hmm. Nope. Hit them pockets, dog.
So here's the thing about people say that it'll make people change. I don't necessarily believe that there would be mass change on how white people perceive black people in this country. As a matter of fact, the data, the studies show that it actually infuriates and further ingrains the idea of bias against white people and racism against white people. So the more from the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, the Housing Act, even the Disabilities Act, white people see those things as taken away from them, and then that emboldens them even more against black people. So hitting them in the pocket will only, according to the studies, will only inflame them, not change them. Laws haven't changed them, and they were righteous laws. So I would say that, and this is why H.R. 40 is so important, is because it is where you can throw all of these ideas and concepts in the hopper and discuss them and flesh them out, and then come up with a bevy of ideas and concepts that we, and, you know, let's take this to the level where it needs to be. This shouldn't be Congress, white people, telling us what we're going to get. This is us telling them what they owe us. And this is not giving us a gift. It's something freely given, benevolent. This is not a gift. This is a debt. Just like Rossi said, this is a debt. And we want the payment, the repayment, the repair, reparations, the repair for the harm that was caused. Now, the repair for the harm that was caused can actually be in greater value, if you put monetary terms on it, than the original debt. Because let's face it, that happened way back then. You know, a mule you can get for $30. Well, you're not going to buy a car, for that matter, a tractor, for $30 today. So it has to put inflation on that, right? We know that precedent has been set for this. You know, they always say there's not enough money, or we cannot do it because this is something that happened in the past. Well, we paid the Jews reparations, and we didn't actually do anything to them. We did pay the Native American Indians reparations multiple times in land and in money, as well as health care. So this is not new. This is something that is already proven and has precedent set. So those arguments actually can be rejected immediately, because on their face they're inaccurate when they say, well, America doesn't pay reparations. Remember, I said that Washington, D.C., the slaves in Washington, D.C. were emancipated in 1862. But the farmers, the plantation owners of those slaves, were paid reparations. So if they could be paid reparations, then those people who created the majority of the wealth of this nation, and you even mentioned Wells Fargo, over $1 trillion, they profited off of slave labor. So we should now also profit from Wells Fargo, because without us, there would be no them. Health, we know Rashi was absolutely right. A lot of our ills of today is because of the food that we eventually call soul food that we were forced to eat because they didn't want the snout, they didn't want the tail, they didn't want the ears, and what have you. Well, they are the ones who inflicted those illnesses on us by forcing us to eat things that we shouldn't eat. Now, we spice it up and we made it right in taste, but it was slowly killing us. So all of those things should be discussed. Somebody just sent me a message that's listening to the show, and they was like, well, why can't we get preschool? Well, I say keep sending those messages on. Send them to us, but also send them to every elected official that you know, because these are things that we are calling for the repayment of the debt that's owed, because the check and everything associated with it is long since past due.
It got lost in the mail. Pony Express.
Or maybe they should allow more black people. Maybe they should have allowed more black people to deliver the mail instead of the one black sister that did it better than anybody else.
Look, I wanted you on today as well for another reason, and Thomas is caught up in a meeting, and I really wanted him on for this, but it's okay. I'm gonna do it myself. I wanted to salute you, brother, because we are 3 days removed from one of the most challenging days in your life. I say that easily because you and I have spoken about it before. In the year of our Lord, 1996, you were deployed to the sandbox, and you were home chilling, doing your thing like only we in the Air Force can do, in your nice, lovely billeting quarters, which so happened to be a hotel. And you were riveted from your state by an explosion. I'm talking about the Cobalt Towers attack that happened on 25 June 1996. It was a car bomb. It killed 20 people, left 498 injured. Of the 498, ladies and gentlemen, we so happened to be talking to one. Rodney Smith was injured in the Cobalt Tower attack. He was injured but not out. He was dazed, confused, but not gone. He remained a leader through the attack, which prompted his recognition and him becoming a recipient of the Purple Heart, which is not given loosely nor easily. Rodney was, as I said previously, dazed and confused. However, he knew that his job was to make sure that others got out, and he did the best that he could in his state to make sure that happened. And because of that, brother, I wanted you on today to Pearl Harbor you a little bit, just to salute you on that, because it's been a minute, and you made a heck of a recovery. When we met in 1998, I'm sorry, that's not even true. We met in 97. You were still walking with the one heck of a hitch. And if they see you now, you know, they might see a little hitch, but it's nowhere near what it was in 97, ladies and gentlemen. Trust me, I've known this brother for almost, 22 years. Goodness gracious. And that hitch was very, very noticeable in the beginning. I mean, I think I actually said to you one day, I was like, man, your feet hurt. Nah, bro. You told me what happened. I was like, oh, wow. And I shared with you that my commander from Hayford was actually the commander of the base that you were at during the attack. Old Terry, pretty teeth. And we had that conversation. But, first off, thank you for your service. Secondly, thank you for your sacrifice. And lastly, did you think that you would be here today?
Oh, AT double two picks, no. Nah, brother.
AT double two picks, I like that.
man, when you get blown up, as a matter of fact, I can tell you exactly what I thought once I realized what was happening. I said a prayer, and I transferred the well-being of my children to my creator and thanked him for giving me the time with them and asked that he would protect them until they could become adults and take the lessons that I taught them. And I prayed that the lessons that I taught them would be sufficient to carry them through their lives. That's exactly what I thought when I was being blown up. And it is true, just like they say on TV, things get very slow.
And slow, yep.
You, brother, you have, believe me, you have time to think about a whole lot of things. And when they say that, oh, well, my life just flew before my eyes, to a certain extent, at least with me, that was true. So it was as if somebody hit the pause button. Lee, I could even see cracks forming in walls and in glass and whatnot before they, you know, were blown apart. So all of that stuff is real. So no, I thought I was a goner, and the people with me, I thought they were gone too, because I remember there was one guy who was actually standing in the direction of the blast, but he wound up walking towards me. And all of a sudden, once time sped up, he like shot by me, because the blast took him by me that fast before it grabbed me, because obviously it hit him first. So nah, brother, I thought I was done for. Here's a kicker. I was supposed to retire. I had opted for the early retirement. And even when I PCS'd into the base, I had let them know that I was going to retire. I was actually out processing when I got the call to report to my commander's office. And he invoked a regulation that says, by the power vested in him as my commander for the good of the Air Force, he could suspend my retirement. And then he asked me if I wanted to voluntarily extend or be voluntold.
But dude, be voluntold? Now, do you want to do this yourself, or do you need me to tell you that you stay for a little while longer? And I'm laughing because, you know, people outside of our sphere, they don't understand stuff like that. So, y'all, how can you be? Dude, I mean, when you think about military service, it is as close to imprisonment or slavery as you're ever going to get. Real talk. It is that freaking close. You know, that you have some freedoms that neither one of those institutions allowed you to have, but it ain't a whole lot more. And when I say some, I mean slithers of freedom. But it is extremely close, because once you raise that hand and say, I'm yours, yeah, dog, you are theirs, and they will do whatever they choose to do with you. Please believe it. Please understand that. It is not a game. It is not a game. So that's why I was laughing. Because, I'm with that. You know, it's like the great TDY that I had, if you recall, when I went to Hawaii, when I was supposed to be gone for a week and a half, and I was gone for, what was it? It was like 2 months? I was gone for like,
Lee, call
no,
it what it was,
like a month
bro.
And a half.
Call it what it was. It was a paid vacation on the taxpayer's expense. Just call it what
it was. Shut your mouth. It was expensive as hell for me, I promise you. But goodness gracious, I had a good old time. But yeah, man, I was like, yo, what you mean? They was like, yo, what you mean? I was like, what you mean? Y'all said I was gonna be here for a week and a half. Yeah, no. Dude, I have no clothes. I have nothing. Yeah, you got to work that out, dog. Like, seriously, well, how long will I be here? Yeah, a week. That didn't even sound convincing, dog. Yeah, it's going to be a week. Okay, 3 weeks later. Yo, you said 3 weeks ago it's going to be a week. What's up? Well, you know, we'll get back to you. Go. Okay.
Now, Lee, think about how I felt when I thought I was about to have the rest of my life ahead of me, had a job
to yourself, right?
And everything. And I get that call, I think it was on a Thursday. And by that Saturday, I was on a plane heading to the sandbox. So life can change very quickly. Now, I didn't complain, though. And I want to tell you one reason why, one of the reasons, other than the fact that it would have done no good, is I signed my
name.
You met
me. And you met me.
Well,
so, I mean, what you talking about?
Yeah, that was a fact, of course, after the fact. here's the thing, though. Black people have served in the United States military before the United States was the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And we've shed blood for this country. And we shed blood for this country when they were still thinking we were cowards, supposedly, and couldn't fight. As a matter of fact, people always talk about white people gave us our freedom because they fought in the Civil War. Well, let's keep in mind the number of Africans, because we were not considered Americans yet, the number of Africans that fought in the Civil War and every war since then. So we have paid the price for being citizens in this country. I don't want to hear white people talking about we're free because white people fought the Civil War for us. We were right there fighting too. So let's not get it twisted. In World War, in the Spanish-American War, when Teddy
the Revolutionary
was
War.
Losing, when, well, yeah, I'm going to go back to Brother Crispus Attuck, but and somebody that's near and dear to your heart, Grandmaster Prince Hall. But what I'm saying is we have always fought for our freedoms, whether here or whether abroad. So this wasn't something where we were standing by in the cut and looking at, yeah, white people go out there and fight for us. Well, first of all, that we should not have been enslaved in the first place, and there shouldn't have been a need for a fight. But second of all, we were there fighting. At San Juan Hill, we wouldn't be lauding Teddy Roosevelt and taking a San Juan Hill right now had it not been for those Buffalo soldiers who, when he was getting his buttocks handed to him, came in and saved the day. And then he told them to dismount their horses, and they were horse soldiers, so that his white soldiers could ride in on those same horses, and he take he and they, the Rough Riders, not the Buffalo soldiers, the Rough Riders, could take the credit for taking San Juan Hill. Some of those same rough riders were killing black people after the war. As a matter of fact, if you look at what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma, we know that it was some former rough riders who killed some of the soldiers, black soldiers, who even had their uniform on and rendered a salute, the universal signal of surrender. And then they were killed by some of those former Rough Riders because they wore the country's uniform and they served side by side. Well, really, the Rough Riders were behind the brothers because the brothers are the ones who pulled their fat out the fire. That's why real history has to be taught so that we can see what we have contributed to this country. And we could talk about World War One and World War Two, and we could go on and on and on of the sacrifices that black people have made for this country on the battlefield, here in the battlefields of the Civil War, the Revolutionary War that supposedly gave this country its freedom from England as they were enslaving black people. And yes, I fought for this country because this is my country. It's mine. My people built it. I'm third generation free, and I'm not giving it up. And I expect my check and every other aspect of the debt that this country owes me. And I am unapologetically black, and I'm unapologetically pro-reparation because I want that debt paid, brother and sisters. And I encourage you all to want the same thing. And I tell you what, when you get in a car accident and you go file your claim, they don't ask you how are you going to spend your money. They don't ask you none of those questions. They say you were injured, and as we may not be able to fix you perfectly, but we're going to make you whole financially by doing this, this, this. We're going to fix your car or get you a new car. We're going to pay for your hospital bills. And we also are going to compensate you for this injury to you. Black people were harmed. And let's get this straight, too. Black people have not been slaves in this country for 235 or 45 years. Black people were enslaved in this country long before 1620 or whatever year that they used. We were enslaved long before that. And the Japanese were paid about $20,000 to $22,000 per person. That was for about 2 years, 2.5 years of intern. They were incarcerated. They were put in little concentration camps. And mm-hmm. I'm saying that the descendants of slaves today, and not just slaves, because that sells us short. Jim Crow lasted for another 100 years. As a matter of fact, I was born in the Jim Crow South. So this should not even be just about slavery, though that's the name that they put on it. But look at you guys talked about it at the beginning of the show with the redlining and all of these other things, lack of access to college, living in hazardous waste pits that they made. We're still dealing with Flint today. And as a matter of fact, y'all watched Three the Hard Way, and it was a predictor in the 70s of what was going to happen to Flint. So, nah, brother, I want the check and whatever else that there is that goes along with it. And, yes, I have proven my value and my loyalty to the ideas of this country, not to the country, to the ideas of this country, and they're good ideas. And we are owed it like every other citizen, and I want it. And if I can go, and I did shed blood on foreign soil on behalf of the ideas of this country, and now I'm back home in civilian clothes, battling for my people in these streets in Las Vegas, whether it's cleaning up the Dr. King statue or somebody calling me wanting to commit, thinking about committing suicide the other night, or staying on the phone talking with them. I'm still serving. That oath is a lifetime oath, and I'm still serving. I'm owed that check, and I don't care what white people tell me that I need to be embarrassed because I'm asking for a repayment. I'm telling them they should be embarrassed for me having to ask for it in the first place.
True indeed. No wiser words have been spoken. No wiser words have been spoken. That's what's up. Well, go ahead.
Now we got to get in the game, though, because the game is politics and money, and politics and money equals power. And if you're not in that game, you have neither. You're not going to make change. We can beg, we can cry, we can walk around in circles protesting. That change will not happen. We cannot change the minds of them by moaning to them and begging them. The way they are taught, as we talked about on the show before, up until 1972, the Daughters of the Confederacy used basically psyops to teach white people they were better than black people and to teach black people they were inferior to white people. That's what's been going on right after the Civil War up until legally, officially 1972. We know that it didn't end exactly in 1972, and we also know that many of those books, even when they did stop bringing in new books, they still had those books that taught that, and the curriculum is still in place today that teaches that we're inferior. So this is a mindset of white people. Remember what Thomas Paine said, that you have to dehumanize yourself in order to dehumanize another human being to enslave them. And so this is not just about black people, for sure it is, but white people's minds have been warped and perverted because of their enslaving of us. And we have to help change their minds as we educate our own people. And that is something that shouldn't be of any cost to black people because we didn't do it. This is a cost at the hands of white people. And every other group that's come into this country and benefited off of our labor and our efforts and what white people did to us, because they did benefit and they're still benefiting from it. So, no, I have no qualms about saying not this needs to come from the American government. And someone says, well, the government is the people. That's right. White people, y'all were the ones who passed the laws. You had control of the laws. You controlled every business. We want it. And we should not. I wish Brother Barry was here because I'm sure he could say it more forcefully and more hip than me. But we should not sit on the sidelines and allow white people to make this determination. We're the one that determines how elections go in most of the states in this country, and definitely in the urban areas, the big cities. And we should be demanding from the city council, the school board on up, that they pass resolutions saying that they support at least H.R. 40. And we shouldn't, and they don't get our vote. They don't get our dollars. They don't get our efforts and door knocking and phone banking and any other volunteer support for their campaigns until H.R. 40 is adopted by the United States government, and then we move on from there.
Do you think that H.R. 40 would get a floor vote in the Senate? See, my biggest concern right now isn't Trump. My biggest concern is flipping the Senate. That is my biggest concern right now. McConnell got to go. McConnell has to go. He is the greatest threat to America, period, that I have seen in my lifetime, to be honest. Well, no, that's not true, because I saw Reagan. So he's the second biggest threat that I've seen in my lifetime, because Reagan and Reaganomics were a huge threat to America domestically. And this is where you get the crack wars and the push for tougher sentences that really didn't materialize until Bush came into play. But this is all the beginning of that. So again, I'm harping on McConnell because we go out here and we turn out for presidential elections, but we don't turn out for the elections that really matter. And I think that's because a lot of us don't understand civics, and civics is the doctrine that says the president signs or vetoes laws. He or she does not write laws. The Congress does that. And even if the president vetoes a law, depending on the strength of Congress, they can override the presidential veto. So I think that we need to keep our focus on those who make our lives tough. And that's why I constantly talk about Mitch McConnell. I try not to talk about Trump too often because he's a waste of my time and he's a waste of my energy, to be honest with you. But do you think that it would get a floor vote in the Senate if it passes the House? Because I don't think the House is going to have a problem with passing it. If Pelosi calls it up, I don't think they would have an issue with passing it. But do you think that it would get a floor vote in the Senate?
I don't know. I know that Mitch McConnell, from his comments, doesn't want it to happen, and he's the one who determines that. But this is what I also say, is Frederick Douglass told us, we have to, you know, power concedes to no man. And if we want it, we got to make it happen. We have to take it. And I'm paraphrasing. So every game that America has opened up to black people, we have surpassed them in performance. Every game. When they started allowing us to go to school, or when we snuck and went to school, or somebody snuck and taught us, we produced scholars of amazing quality. Every time. And the game of politics, to me, is absolutely no different. We got to get in. We have to get in there. We have to learn the rules. And we have to beat them like we beat them at everything else when we've had the opportunity and when we've been able to take the opportunity. So though I know through McConnell's rhetoric what he says he doesn't want, we have to understand that, again, you tell every elected official at every level that we want them to support this. And there's other ways to go around McConnell, and that's why we have separation of powers. Let's get the majority of states to say that, pass a resolution that says they support H.R. 40. And it can force Congress to go along with it. So there are other avenues to us. That's why it's critically important that we get involved with our school boards and our state legislators who make the law that the school boards administer to ensure that civics, that because our form of government is a participatory form of government. So if you're not taught how to participate, just like in any sport, if you don't know the rules, you tend to lose. And so we need to learn the rules and then play the game better than everybody else. So we have to go out there and vote for the people. Well, we have to tell the people what we want. Either vote for the candidates who will support us or field candidates that will support us. Support them, vote for them, get them in office, support them once they're in office, and push these things. Whether we're talking your city, whether we're talking my city and right now in Las Vegas, back in Brooklyn, New York, black people determine who gets elected. We haven't done our part. We have to do our part. But we also have to put demands on the system. And I'm not going to change from those words because that's simply what we have to do.
Okay.
So McConnell, I'm not worried about McConnell right now because I realize that this is a struggle and we need to play. Yeah, we need to push right now. And we need to do some tactical things. But this is a strategic battle. In other words, it's long term. We need to have some short term or tactical goals between now and victory. But there is going, unless black people have just totally lost their mind, and I'm going to help them find it if they have, we need to do this because we have a brother here. He has the Las Vegas Black Book, and he came up with an article that says that I think in about 35 years, on average, black people, I think, will have a zero net worth. Now, this is regardless of who's president, who's governor. Well, if you don't own anything and don't have any money, then though it may not be slavery, it is the next thing to it or close to it. We have more people that's been incarcerated than that were enslaved at any one period. So these things are still happening to us. So unless we do things differently, those things are going to continue to happen, but they're going to accelerate. They're going to accelerate. So what I'm saying is black people, white people are not going to change unless we make them change. But the change starts with us and in our actions, the change of the laws, because we're going to change the laws before we change the minds of white people. If history is a predictor of the future, that's the way it's probably going to work. So let's get to work on those laws, H.R. 40 being one of them. And Mitch McConnell will not be in that seat forever. And if we get enough other people in there in opposition to him, we can flip the Senate. And when I say flip the Senate, it doesn't mean it just has to go Democrat because, let's face it, our plight doesn't change, regardless of whether it's a Democrat or Republican.
Correct. We need to elect folks whom have our best interests at heart and will work for our best interests, regardless of party. Absolutely. Because
more thing, Lee. In Las Vegas, we are actively pursuing the Black Leadership Summit. And this is for Las Vegas, and I encourage brothers and sisters to have one wherever they are. And Lee, I hope you and Brother Barry will lead those efforts where you are. And that is where black people, I'm not talking black and browns, because remember, some of the browns consider themselves Caucasian and officially are listed as Caucasian. This is when black people come together amongst themselves and determine what it is that we want and establish our agenda, assign people and groups their responsibility in bringing that agenda to fruition, and then going out amongst our people and lobbying our people as well as our elected officials on what it is that we are expecting from our elected officials and helping educate our people on the process until we can bring it back to our schools. And that should be a part of what we're demanding of our elected officials before our vote. is that we want our children throughout all school years to be taught how the American form of government works. When I was on the campaign trail, that was number one and number two of what people said to me is, Rodney, I really want to participate, but I simply don't understand. I do not know. And so we've been doing little education seminars since the election to help educate the people. But we need to do that in every city so that they'll better prepare them. So, yes, the Las Vegas Black Leadership Summit is coming. We haven't nailed down the date yet. We're thinking about October, September, or maybe even in January, which I like January because that gives us more time. And I'm encouraging all brothers and sisters, as we are still in the celebratory mode of Juneteenth, let's actualize true freedom and let's bring ourselves together, collect our minds, our thoughts, and let's determine what we need to continue. And then we will make the demands of our elected officials and those who want to be our leaders on how it's going to, what we expect of them and what we're going to hold them accountable for.
Okay. We'll talk offline about that. That's something that sounds very tantalizing. I can dig my teeth into that one without a doubt. But, brother, I don't want to take up much more of your time. I know you are extremely busy, but I appreciate you for joining us as we discuss the importance of Juneteenth, as we discuss the importance of H.R. 40, and as we honor you for your service and your sacrifice during the Cobalt Tower attack. I want to thank everyone that has joined us live and will join us later, as we always do. For your time, we do this Saturday mornings from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I want to thank Rashi for jumping in with us and riding with us for as long as you could. Brother Barry, don't know where you were, bro, but it's okay. We'll catch up real soon. We will continue to build and solidify this union that we have. Rodney, unfortunately, I haven't seen you in about 2 years. I'll get out there real soon, though, so you and I can spend some time, break some bread, and do what we do when we get together in person, figure out where we want to go next with this thing. But again, sir, thank you for everything that you do. Thank you for your tireless efforts, and thank you for your never-ending sense of service.
Right on, brother. Appreciate you for allowing me on the show and recognizing. And I appreciate you recognizing me, but we did lose over 20 people at that one specific attack. And like you said, many of them were injured with lifelong injuries, physical, mental, or a combination of the two. And sometimes the mental can be just as bad or worse than the physical. So let's keep those brothers and sisters in mind because they had to survive in a world which is not their world any longer. So thank you for recognizing that particular anniversary and to all of those who've been hurt or injured in service to the 99%, since only they say only about 1% of us serve. So that's 1% that's out there doing what they do as we talk right now in who knows where and what conditions. Big shout out to all of you who are out there doing it now and to all of you who's the shoulders that Lee and I stood on. We appreciate you. Yes, I'm going all the way back to Brother Crispus Attucks and to Grandmaster Prince Hall, to them all. So thanks, brother, for recognizing.
Not a problem, sir. You all have a great one. Thank you again. Family, you all be good. You all be safe. We will catch you here next week on the radio. Until then, peace.
Peace.